You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Thursday, All Marine Radio continues, and we're privileged to be joined once again, I might add, by Kate Germano, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel, the Chief Operating Officer at the Service Women's Action Network. And Kate, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
All right. No, it's our pleasure. And first of all, Kate, can we do like a 120-second little biographical update? Born and raised where?
I was actually born in El Paso, Texas, because my dad was in the Army, and I like to say I'm from Maryland because that's really where I spent the majority of my time growing up.
Well, I don't blame you, because El Paso is a dreadful place.
It is.
For those of us
absolutely. Having them back.
There you go. The went to college?
Went to college in Maryland, actually in a town called Towson, right outside of Baltimore. Went to a tiny little liberal arts school that was all girls up until maybe the year or two before I got there.
Okay. And graduated with a degree in what?
History, pre-law. Couldn't do anything with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
Actually, I tried to get into the Naval Academy, and I didn't have the math and science background. I clearly was not smart enough, and I happened to pursue a commission in the Navy after I graduated from college. They said I wasn't smart enough. I walked across the hall, and the recruiter was right there for the Marines, didn't know anything about it. Walked in, the recruiter asked me if I was there waiting for my boyfriend taking the ASVAB, and at that point, I was intrigued, and I was hooked as soon as they started talking about the higher standards.
The okay, and your MOS in the Marine Corps?
I was a manpower officer, but I was really fortunate because I hated manpower. I hated being an adjutant and a legal officer, and I was fortunate in that I had bosses who allowed me to do a lot of other stuff outside of my MOS, and that was really the best part of my career.
Okay, all right. The you retire in what year, at what rank?
I retired as a lieutenant colonel in July of 2015.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry, 2016. It was just yesterday.
I was going to say. Okay, so that brings us to kind of sort of to today. Wanted to have you on last week, and you were out and about. For those of us who've never been, the Appalachian Trail, yes, no?
Yes, amazing. Got to go. Once-in-a-lifetime experience. Absolutely incredible, and as you knew last week, I was completely out of pocket, so there is very little connectivity on the mountains, and just an amazing experience.
Okay. Give me your gut reaction to Marines United.
I think the best way to put it is that it's heartbreaking, because I think no matter how long you serve, whether it's a year or 20 or 30, we all strongly believe in the institution and what we believe personally it represents. And so it was heartbreaking, but, you know, by this time, it is certainly not a surprise. I mean, you've heard me talk in the past about the fact that the Marine Corps has cultural issues that we have not acknowledged or reconciled related to gender. And, it was horrifying to see that play out in such large numbers in the media, 30,000 potentially involved. But it was even more heartbreaking having to listen to General Neller during the testimony in front of the SASC yesterday give basically a heartbreaking, speech where he acknowledges that the Marine Corps culture is in need of great repair.
I want to talk about that.
So, you know, watching the man who is tasked to lead the Marine Corps and who is responsible for everything his Marines do or not do, to listen to him talk about how it's incomprehensible to him that his Marines would be responsible for this type of behavior is so not in keeping with our core values. It was heartbreaking, and it was really hard to listen to him over a two-hour period come full circle. You know, he started off by saying, in my heart, I don't want to believe the Marine Corps has a cultural problem. And then one of the last statements that he made was, the Marine Corps has a cultural problem.
We aired the entire hearing, and it was riveting. Mm-hmm. It was riveting audio to listen to senator after senator ask hard question. Let me just as we all try to get our hands around this problem, this issue in and of itself. I try to put it, you know, okay, so what's the situation that this issue takes place in? What I heard out of the hearing was the commandant said 30,000 people belong to this website. Mm-hmm. 500 or less access this hard drive. So mm-hmm. I guess the investigation will reveal how many people actually were part of a subset
sure.
of that 30,000. And then I guess the investigation will find out who the actors were. Essentially, this information was in some cases stolen. In other cases, it was sent consensually between a boy,
right.
a boyfriend and a girlfriend. And then
mm-hmm.
that was weaponized by, you know,
right.
essentially by putting it on a public site and then mm-hmm. adding, personal information, name, cell phone number, email address, place
yeah.
of work
right.
on occasion. This stuff, goes on in our culture now. I was talking to a high school teacher, recently retired. He said, Mac, this stuff goes on in grade school, okay?
Yep.
It gets worse in middle school. It's incredible in high school, and I don't even
mm-hmm.
know what it's like in college. So
right.
why would you guys think you're exempt to it? This is okay.
That's right.
This is okay in our society. He said, look it up. 35 states and the District of Columbia have laws about revenge
That's
porn,
right.
which is publicizing something which was sent to you with the expectation of privacy. And the consequences range from a misdemeanor to a felony, depending on
right.
the degree of damage that it does. So, Kate, I want to talk about, and I know this is another piece in terms of also the sexual assault problem,
mm-hmm.
the way we deal with that issue, the confidentiality that female Marines believe they do or don't have in that system.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you draw this picture of we get young people from this culture, yeah, we put them through boot camp, and yeah, they look a little bit different, but they come from that culture. What do
right.
you think the Marine Corps has to do to make the indelible impression on young people that even in today's modern culture, the
mm-hmm.
weaponization and the exploitation of somebody else is something that we won't tolerate? How does the Marine Corps do that?
So I think two easy first steps. I mean, first and foremost, there is an amazing book out. Months ago, I started talking about this book on social media. It's called Girls and Sex, and I know it sounds really horrific, but it is exactly about what you just talked about. It is the fact that as soon as girls turn 6, they lose confidence in themselves, and then they start getting involved with this type of behavior, either because they feel like they have to, they feel pressured, there is a trust associated with an individual, and they feel like they can. And so this book it fundamentally changed my life when I read it, because it made me realize how social media is impacting young people, men and women, young men and young women. So that's the first thing, is that book should be absolutely essential reading for any staffing NCO or officer in the military, particularly in the Marine Corps.
And it's called Girls and Sex or Girls on
Sex? It's called Girls and Sex.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, the book fundamentally changed my life because it made me comprehend the pressures that young women face when it comes to trying to fit in, developing trust relationships, what is considered normal behavior. But here's the deal. As soon as someone joins the military, we need to make sure that there's not a say-do gap in terms of how we idealize our institution and the values that we say we're supposed to uphold. Because the bottom line is that we say that in the military we have higher standards, particularly in the Marine Corps. I mean, the Marine Corps foundation is, hey, we have an ethos that is based on the highest standards of any service. And that means that sometimes what you did when you were 17 years old in high school, whether it's smoking pot, whether it's, you know, dating someone who's 14, whether it's dealing with this type of photo sharing, the bottom line is that that behavior may have been accepted then, but it's not accepted now. It's not an acceptable part of our culture. And I think yesterday you heard the Commandant of the Marine Corps grappling with this problem of comprehension. He said point blank, he doesn't understand how social media works. This problem is not something that just happened this year. It's something that has been systemically getting worse over the past 4 or 5 years. And so I think because there's a lack of knowledge about what's happening with young men and young women that could be addressed somewhat by reading these books like Girls and Sex. The other problem is, you know, until you resolve the say-do gap in how we view the institution and our values and how those are really being applied at the lowest levels of the chain, whether it's the officer chain or the enlisted chain, we're never going to fix this problem. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I heard the word values yesterday. But clearly the values that we think we as senior people, older people, that we are responsible to upholding, clearly the way we perceive those values is different than the way that a lot of younger people perceive those values. And so you mentioned that, you know, there's this idea that the Commandant passed yesterday that only 500 Marines access these photos. But here's the deal. That's only one part of this problem. There were a lot of derogatory comments about women Marines and civilian women on that website that people just, the 30,000 Marines who accessed the site, ignored and didn't do anything to stop. And so the photos were just one element of a bigger problem, and that is that women Marines are not perceived the same way that male Marines are, and they're certainly not treated equally.
I had Lieutenant General Milstead on a program yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I got an email from a female Marine, and she said, you know, I watched most of the Commandant's testimony, and I'm hearing General Milstead, and what I want to say is, to the 30,000 Marines that were part of that, and I heard that its original intent was to be supportive of veterans and Marines and whatnot. And mm-hmm. okay, I'll accept that at face value. What I don't accept is I don't accept that these Marines saw this stuff.
That's right.
Saw how bad it was and then thought that either it was okay and turned
right.
around and walked away from it as opposed to intervening into
right,
it.
Exactly.
And she said, we desperately need you other 29,500 to turn on those 500 and make it shameful for them. We can't
That's
fix
right.
this just women being involved in this. You
Absolutely.
Have to help us. And I thought that I just your comments about that, because to me that's part of the issue relative to all of this, is that,
mm-hmm.
Yes, and I'll just, let's just say NCIS's preliminary number is, and I've seen two of them, mm-hmm. One of them is 500 or less, approximately 500 access this hard drive. I've also seen a number on CNN that said that there's an estimate that it will be several dozen who are actually posting this information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Now, again, the problem is the rest of us need to intervene in that.
That's right.
And
yeah.
and that's what's lacking in this culture. And the other comment
right.
I'll make to you, and I'll let you react, Kate, is that my high school teacher friend also told me this. Hey, Mac, let me tell you something that's changed. What you recall growing up, you grew up in a Judeo-Christian environment. Kids now grow up in a largely secular environment, okay? So things, he said, I know your background. So look, you went to a Catholic school. I said, yep. You went to an all-boys Catholic high school. I said, yep. You went to a Catholic university. I said, I did. He said, look, that's not how young people grow up today. They grow up with the internet. He said, now, I don't want to say there's a race to the bottom relative to our moral standards. He said, but there's a slow migration to an ever and ever lower expectations of what mm-hmm. of what we expect out of young people today. And so the Marine Corps, he said, I can't imagine the leap that you are relative to the average high school student in terms of what you expect. He said, mm-hmm. how do you attempt to imbue that value change on people? And I
well,
said,
I don't know. And I don't necessarily buy his argument, and here's why. To say that this is something that is specific to this generation is a false statement altogether. I mean, last time you and I talked, we talked a lot about recruit training. And the fact is that regardless of social media, regardless of the mechanism of communicating derogatory information about female Marines, this problem has been ongoing for generations. So to assume that this problem is specific to this generation because of something like a lack of religious background or a lack of family structure, that is a misdiagnosis of the root causes of the problem and could potentially put us on the wrong road for the solution. I mean, let's be real. When you know, and Alex McCoy did a great opinion piece in the New York Times on this very problem. I mean, he's only recently left the Marine Corps, and he was adamant about what he saw and experienced when he was at recruit training. When women are separated from the men in training, and they're not even included on both training depots, that point blank is a problem. Nowhere else would separate be considered equal, first and foremost. But second of all, when you have drill instructors who are telling these young men at the most foundational level of their training, when we're trying to imbue them with our core values, when they have the drill instructors, their leadership examples telling them that women are bad, that women are slow, that women will bring them down, that they shouldn't talk to the female recruits, that it's easier for the female recruits, that they suck, that they're slow, that when you have them teaching that type of instruction at the most influential point of a Marine's career, and that is recruit training, allegedly, we can't expect anything else. And so this is a problem that is worse now because of social media, because social media makes it anonymous, but it was not created by social media. It has been created by and perpetuated by the way we train Marines at the entry level. I mean, that's my conclusion. I'm sticking to that. I believe that with all my heart. I was willing to give up everything on that very premise.
So, okay. So let's talk, we can, let's talk about your premise. His statement more was that the things that buttressed us years ago, and I won't disagree with your argument that this behavior existed, but I think his point was that those things that even used to buttress us years ago are no longer absent, and that, mm-hmm. that young people face more challenges because of their greater freedom, exposure to the internet, and
sure.
what you can do anonymously, and that's what they walk into
right.
this organization with. Let's talk about the premise of your argument. The women
yeah.
that I've had on here, and I did a series of what it's like to be a junior female Marine in the Marine Corps.
Sure.
And I think I sent you a piece of audio, and Katie White helped me produce it yesterday. She got out as a corporal. She was a food service specialist. And when I asked her yesterday, was she surprised at all of this? She laughed, and she said, no. She said, I actually mm-hmm. find it somewhat laughable because this has been going on for a long time. And then she recounted a story of several years ago, a picture of her put on one of these websites or Facebook pages.
Right.
And she talked about that, you know, that this kind of behavior has been going on. However, mm-hmm. when I asked these women if they think boot camp ought to be integrated, their response is no. That they see value in being in a female platoon,
mm-hmm.
However, they don't think the separate battalion it serves them well. I'm curious if you were king or queen for a day, whichever you would want to prefer, because gender is not important to me. If you were either one of those, if you were the monarch for the day, maybe that's a better term, monarch for the day, how would you design recruit training in the Marine Corps?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a great question because this came up yesterday at length in the SASC, right? So the Commandant talked about how we've integrated training to a greater extent than we ever have, and that's actually not true. The only thing he's done is he's integrated the physical fitness test at the end of training, right before graduation. Everything else is segregated. And so here's the problem. These young women who go through that segregated training, they don't see the generations of statistics, the decades worth of statistics that show that for literally years, the female recruits have never, ever been able to achieve the same scores or higher than the male recruits in any single category. And that's not an ability issue. It has everything to do with having lowered expectations from the start. So they're not privy to that knowledge. And I'll tell you that the drill instructors are a great example of what happens when you have Stockholm syndrome. A lot of them refuse to acknowledge that the environment that they're training in is a negative one because it would be an admission of their own culpability to some extent in the process. And so for me, when I see the stats and I had to convince my Marines of this when I was at 4th Battalion. I showed them the statistics. I showed them how the female recruits had performed on the rifle range for decades. I showed them how the female recruits had performed in academics, in every category. And when they saw it on paper, and then they recognized all of the derogatory language that they heard about their own female recruits and their own performance as drill instructors, all of that hit home. And they started to recognize that there is a problem with the way we're doing entry-level training. The bigger issue that I have with the word integration is that no one has defined it. I see great value in having female drill instructors have their recruits live in a female squad bay. But when I talk about integration, I'm talking about having that female company or platoon be part of an integrated battalion. I think that the mentorship that should be happening in the squad bays by the female drill instructors is important. But I also think that there is a great importance in having male and female recruits see both men and women in positions of responsibility and authority and as leadership during that entry-level training process. So I understand why those women would say to a certain degree that they want to keep segregation. I would say that the only way to improve competition and to improve the perception of female leadership is to show that at the most junior level, and that is potentially by integrating women in a female platoon or company in an integrated battalion.
Kate Germano, my guest this morning, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel. She's currently the Chief Operations Officer at the Service Women's Action Network. We do that at Officer Candidate School. Is that the model that we're talking about?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a really safe model to take. We've seen it work. The excuse that the Marine Corps is consistently given for why we have segregated training, it's kind of demeaning in and of itself. What they say, what they told me I had to tell VIPs who were visiting the installation in the battalion when we would do briefs, is that the female recruits need to be segregated from the men to improve their confidence. And to me, you know, I go by an old football coach who said, hey, confidence is born of results, right? So if we think that giving young women confidence only comes from being led by female Marines, then what are we doing in the rest of the Marine Corps? And if we think that being led by female Marines produces confidence, even at the expense of rifle range scores, even at the expense of physical fitness ability, even at the expense of academics, how are we making the institution stronger?
And the answer is?
We're not. I mean, clearly there is a disconnect. You know, I do believe that there is a time and a place to have female mentorship and leadership at the disposal of the recruits. But I would also say that that does the male recruits a disservice because they're not exposed to female leadership. And I would also say that it puts the female recruits at a further disadvantage because they don't get a lot of the tactical expertise that some of the male infantry leaders and drill instructors have had as a result of a lot of their combat deployments.
So in your perfect world, the OCS model works in that you they have their own squad bay. Could be in the same building. It might not be. They're another platoon inside the company.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when we
in the same building.
They should be.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely in the same building, because if you don't have men and women living in the same building, again, you're creating separation, and with separation comes suspicion. With suspicion comes the idea that women are being held to lower standards and aren't as tough and strong and fit.
Right. You know what? Let me tell you. I mean, I went through officer candidate school in 1983, and that's the way my company was. Charlie Company.
You're an old dog.
Exactly. It's called or it's called the old core. Just don't forget that. When we used to be rough and tough. Now, but we had there was a female platoon in my company, and they lived in the same building. They were upstairs on the opposite wing, and we saw their platoon commander, we saw their platoon sergeant, and that was a part of it. And it was never much of a big deal to us as we went through it. And so that model doesn't seem like a quantum leap for the Marine Corps.
No, it doesn't. And here's the problem, though. Until we define what integration means, there is this perception that what it has to mean is men and women living together in the same squad base. That is a model. It's being implemented in other countries, not necessarily the model that we would have to apply here, but that's sort of the default that people jump to is we can't have integration because men and women can't live together in the same squad base without bad stuff happening.
Okay.
So,
I might agree with that. I don't know if that's a peculiar Marine. I don't know that that's a peculiar Marine event. That would be an interesting event to say the least. Let me ask you a couple of boot camp questions.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what is the effect of on females when they're thrown in with males, and at every physical event they're the tail end, because that's one of the things I've heard brought up to me, and that it's relatively demotivating when you know you have a company that's standing there waiting for you, and you have everybody's yelling, and it's already the Marine Corps physical fitness standards are not easy. And it's an assault on your confidence, to say the least, and then you get built through it. What do you make of that as a former battalion commander?
Yeah, it's easy. So that expectation that women will be fit and be able to start competing with their male counterparts, that has to start before they're allowed to enlist. And the biggest problem that we have with women being not competitive with female counterparts and certainly not in shape is due to the way that we recruit women from the instance. So, and I know this from two tours on recruiting duty. I saw it as the product of what we were receiving from recruiters when I was at 4th Battalion. I mean, the bottom line is that we do not recruit women the same way we recruit men. And we had this conversation, I think, last time I spoke.
Right.
The reality is that because the quota for women is so tiny compared to the quota for men, which has a direct correlation to the size of the squad base in that segregated compound at 4th Battalion, it's an artificial bottleneck, but because we recruit so few women, the recruiters don't go out and actively look for women who've been part of high school sports teams, part of competitive clubs, part of martial arts organizations. And so we tend to allow women who are coming to the Marine Corps as a last resort to walk in and say, I want to join. And that's what starts the conversation. What needs to start the conversation with the recruiter should be the same qualification that a male prospective applicant has to have with that male recruiter. And that is essentially, you need to prove to me that you have what it takes. Start coming to our weekly PT with all the other prospective applicants and the police who've already joined, and prove to me that you're tough enough to become one of us. We don't do that with the women. We tend to allow them to walk in and join as soon as they've failed out of college, when they've lost a job, when they're running from a bad relationship, whether it's at home or with a significant other. And because of that, we're missing out on building that quality pool right from the instant. There's a reason that the female initial strength test failure rate is 8 times greater than that of the male recruits at the training depot. And it has exactly to do with the caliber of woman we're bringing in and the lack of accountability for preparation when she's in the delayed entry program. So I think by focusing on quality recruiting, focusing on those high school athletes, focusing on women who are fit before they even join, I think we would see a much different result in terms of that confidence and that competition. And I did see that when I was at Parris Island. We had recruiters bust their rear ends with their female pulleys just like they did with their males, and they would come to the depot and prove that they could compete with their male counterparts, but they were few and far between.
Next question. And this is a recruiting question, and I'll ask you. Yeah. You can be Mick Rick here. How would you fix that? Should I be a recruiter, but my the billet I fill in this recruiting station is I only recruit women. My job is because it sounds to me the situation that you've created for me is that look, I'm for every one woman, for every 10 people. It's 9.75 male and 0.25 woman. So I need to focus on men. That's my business, right? And then the occasional woman I can do a drive-by on. I can find one. I've checked that block. But my job is to recruit men for the Marine Corps. That's what I do. I'm a recruiter. That's what I do. How do you institutionally change that for recruiters?
So first and foremost, this idea that women can only and always ever comprise less than 9% of the Marine Corps, that's a false premise. And that small percentage is solely based on the throughput at 4th Battalion, where the squad bays are infinitely smaller, and so there are fewer racks for recruits to sleep in compared to the male battalion squad base. So first and foremost, you fix the problem by eliminating that false bottleneck that restricts the number of women who can join from
okay.
the get-go.
And we've already done that. They can go in any squad bay. They're interchangeable.
Absolutely.
So we've taken that cap off.
Once you increase the throughput of women coming into the Marine Corps, if you require accountability of them, and as a recruiter for all of your pullees, you're making them come to weekly PT, and you're tracking their improvement with physical fitness, I mean, that's your job as a recruiter. You know, if you're only doing that for your male pulleys, then you're failing right off the bat. And that's what we see is there is very much a hands-off approach with the recruiting force, which is predominantly male. We see a hands-off approach, and we see female pulleys allowed to skip weekly PT. We see them consistently be allowed to slack off. They're not held accountable to making progress. And they're allowed to shift to recruit training as initial strength test failures, which would never be acceptable for our male police. So you fix it through accountability.
What does that mean?
You ensure, as a commander, I made sure that I was at weekly physical fitness training in my recruiting substation so that I could see firsthand, and I had 13 of them, and they were spread over 2 states. But once a month, at a minimum, I would be at every single recruiting substation, and I would be observing this type of supervision and training. I would be pulling pool cards, which is the card that we use to track the recruit's development and performance from the time they join to the time they go to training. And I would be looking to see who had skipped PT, who was failing, who was struggling, why we had not seen them, and I would be holding my recruiters accountable to making sure that we fixed those problems. We had monthly initial strength tests where we would require all of the shippers for the next 90 days to come and run an initial strength test under the supervision of the recruiting station headquarters personnel. And we would make sure that if we identified folks who were not ready to go to training, we would make sure that we moved them out and we darn well made sure that the recruiters understood that it was their responsibility to get those kids where they needed to go. And I'll tell you, in doing those things, my recruiters began to understand that it's making their lives easier to be leaders up front, because what would end up happening is they would have fewer discharges. Those recruiters actually achieved the lowest failure rate, the lowest attrition rate for men and women that had ever been accomplished in the history of the Marine Corps' recruiting efforts. And they did that because once they started to understand that it was a leadership obligation and that accountability in the pool was no different than in the fleet, they were able to take fewer discharges, and it made their lives easier. And they started to believe it, and it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that's how.
All right, so what we're talking about in terms of solving the problem that we're seeing on social media is starting with issues that are, in Kate's opinion, are institutionalized in boot camp by the way we train. So the way we get away from that is we adopt the OCS model, platoon inside of a male company. It's integrated in everything they do. And males see females. Female, you get your ass chewed by both male and female instructors. The recruits get to see males and females leading them, and that's better. That's better for females. We're gonna take a quick break, Kate. And when we come back, I want to ask you about. Does the UCMJ sufficiently address this issue of image transporting, or I don't know if that's the right word, but the transmission of images.
Dissemination.
Exactly. And then I want to talk to you about confidence and the whole SARC chain of command. And so we'll take a quick break. More with our guest, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Kate Germano, right after this.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on a Thursday. My guest this morning is Kate Germano, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Marine Corps. And, Kate, before the break, I kind of teased it, because that's what you do in radio, how does this address what we're seeing? We see males who've seen females now in recruit training, and they, at least by your vision, they have a more balanced view. You don't have that would eliminate, hopefully, the editorializing among male drill instructors about female recruits and what they can and can't do. They would be part and parcel of what you did every day and what you saw every day. I want to ask you about the UCMJ. Does the UCMJ need a specific article to address what is so prevalent? And I don't want to say acceptable, but what is prevalent in civilian culture, to kind of emblazon, to make bold the statement to young recruits that transmitting an image of somebody else that was sent to you with the expectation of confidence is illegal and can be punished under the UCMJ?
Yes. I think clearly there's a need to look at the UCMJ and come up with an applicable offense that is specific to the dissemination of images, the dissemination of information that is in any other situation would be given to someone with the understanding of that it would not be disseminated. I think that that's critical. But I think more importantly, that we have an issue with accountability in the Marine Corps. We tend to vilify commanders who hold the line and require accountability of their Marines. We tend to vilify those individuals and make it unpopular to make hard decisions about holding Marines accountable.
Explain that to me, because it sounds to me That sounds to me completely counter to our culture. What we're talking about is holding people accountable. And I would tell you this, and please comment on this too. We don't need another class. We have enough classes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What needs to happen is people need to be held accountable, and they need to have the wood laid to them when they don't do their job. And I've said this. I don't want to see another court martial of another sergeant or staff sergeant at Parris Island. I want to see a court martial of a lieutenant colonel who was supposed to supervise it, or a sergeant major, or a first sergeant. And I will tell you this, when you see that, you will get a lot of attention in the Marine Corps, like, what? Oh,
absolutely.
That's
but the
just...
reason that you don't see that is because there isn't accountability. We make it completely counter to a commander's daily operations to hold people to task. The idea becomes that we've become risk averse when it comes to how we hold Marines accountable because of the way we evaluate commanders and the tools we use. In my case, there was a DOMI survey, the Command Climate Survey,
right,
that multiple people were allowed to fill out, one password for the entire battalion. I had people outside of the battalion filling it out, talking about how mean I was. But here's the deal. When you look at the complaints that Marines had in my unit, the Marines who were angry with me were the ones who were being held accountable for unprofessional conduct, abusive recruits, and violations of the UCMJ. I got fired. You know, we have a culture in the Marines where there's a say-do gap. We say we hold Marines accountable. We say we expect leadership. We say we expect our commanders to be responsible for everything the Marines do and don't do. But we don't actually do it. And I think that's what the Commandant is grappling with right now. In his testimony yesterday to the SASC, he admitted that we have company-grade officers, we have staff non-commissioned officers who don't understand that it is their obligation to know their Marines, know what they're doing, and hold them accountable. And it's not happening. So you're right. It's a darn shame that you don't see the regimental commander, the depot commanding general, the sergeant major. It's wrong that you don't see them being held accountable for these failures. Because I can tell you right now, those failures weren't created overnight. Colonel Haas and General Williams and General Reynolds, they all helped to create what's happened at Parris Island over years. And none of them have been held to task. Instead, we're taking staff sergeants to courts martial.
You know, and I had the same reaction, I mean, just so everybody knows, about the whole Abu Ghraib thing. Did you see a colonel, a lieutenant colonel, a major, a brigadier general?
Well,
did you see anybody?
There was a general who was relieved because of that, but not charged.
Right.
Here's the thing. You want to hear supreme irony. When I got to 4th Battalion and I knew that my Marines, my drill instructors, were abusing and hazing each other and they were abusing and hazing the recruits, the first presentation I did with them was to lay down that law, that line in the sand, and give them a comparison snapshot between what happened at Abu Ghraib and what was happening in 4th Battalion. Because they're identical situations whenever there's abuse or hazing. Identical situations and identical contributing factors. And it all comes down to leadership or lack thereof and a lack of supervision and accountability.
The next question. In this whole thing, the backdrop of this, and you saw it yesterday at the Senate Armed Services Committee, is this idea wrestling with the sexual assault issue in the military.
Mm-hmm.
The DOD is adamant that the court-martialing authority for sexual assault should stay with commanders for reasons of, quote-unquote, good order and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Yet when you have females, when I have females on the program, they say, look, here's what you're confronted with. One, the guy's in your unit.
Right.
He's in the building normally, okay?
Sure.
You went out and were drinking with him, mm-hmm. and then something bad happened. Okay?
Right.
And then the next thing you're confronted with is, if I go to the SARC, it's not going to stay confidential.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's going to see me going in or out of there.
Right.
And then word is going to spread, hey, blah, 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 blah. Some clerk mm-hmm. is going to see a piece of paper, right, on the CO's
right.
desk when they go in to drop off a folder. It is not going to stay confidential. And then I'm going to be the one that gets ostracized. So I'm going to pay for this crime twice. I'm going to get accused of not trusting my chain of command. And so the best thing for me to do is to say nothing. The other thing, and Katie White said it, if I go on a website to defend myself or call people out, all I do is make myself a visible target
right.
for greater harassment.
Mm-hmm.
So my question, does – and I don't know if there's anything we can do about the online thing except to get the other 29,500 to say, hey, sorry, that's not right.
Not tolerate it.
We're not going to be a part of that. The SART thing and that, how do you make that better? Can you make that better?
Well, I think this goes back to the commander accountability thing. I mean, the part of the problem that we have is that women, the Department of Defense will say all day long that women are reporting at greater rates,
right.
which is an indication that they trust the process. And part of that, I think, is due to the fact that we've got now dedicated legal support for individuals who go through something traumatic like this so that they can decide how they want to proceed and what's best for them. The problem that we have ultimately with things like retaliation, things like somebody who alleges that an offense took place who's ostracized, the problem with that is that it comes back down to the commander and the type of accountability that they're laying down and the type of attention and the knowledge that they have about what's happening in their own unit. So, you know, we say everything in the Marine Corps comes down to leadership, but that's where the rubber meets the road. The other part of that is, you know, there's a lot of talk about taking the leeway away from commanders. If we were to remove the ability for them to determine what happens with sexual assault, it would be catastrophic for good order and discipline. But look, good order and discipline is already being dramatically negatively influenced by what isn't happening at the commander level now. So to say that it would get worse if we tried something different doesn't necessarily make sense, because a battalion commander doesn't have the latitude, they don't have the jurisdiction ability to take all felonies covered by the UCMJ to court. You know, the more serious offenses get referred up the chain. So in other words, they'll go to a general court-martial, which means that a general is the one who's convening the court-martial. So sexual assault's no different, and it should be handled the same way.
Okay, I'm an infantry guy. Okay, give me a system that I would feel comfortable that saying, you know what, she's right. I don't know that I have either the time, you know, or understand the complexities to deal with this issue. I'm not confident I do. And me thinking that it's just like any other issue probably is an insult to the issue.
So
if I accept that idea, yet I still believe that it ought to be handled within the organization, what is the infrastructure that you would create for me that would handle those kind of cases?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to understand that there are ways to monitor networks that would allow commanders to have a more consistent view of what was going on in their own units in terms of how social media was being used. So we do this type of thing with child pornography, for example. That's happening. People are being turned in because there's monitoring of the network. And that's why Major General Lori Reynolds was at the hearing yesterday, partly because she was a token, but partly because she's in charge of the Marine Corps' network as MAR-4 Cyber Commander. So there are ways to monitor networks to give commanders the tools and the knowledge they need to know about what's happening in their units. But the fact of the matter is that, again, this goes back to accountability. If I'm a commander and I know that there is a problem in my command and I do nothing because I am more concerned about getting promoted, I'm more concerned about my next duty station or getting a school, then I shouldn't be in command. And I think we need to change the perception that we have and the moral obligation. We need to pay more attention to that moral obligation that commanders have to be aware of everything going on in their units and holding people accountable at every step. You know, in addition to rewarding Marines, there is a requirement that we hold people accountable, we let them recover from mistakes when it's possible, and we lead and mentor them. And that's just not happening.
Okay, when I heard that yesterday, I shuddered, honestly, to think that now I've got to be responsible for their online behavior. I don't have enough time to do all the stuff I'm supposed to do right now. How in God's name and with what tools am I going to monitor the online behavior of my Marines?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the assumption is that a commander is not going to be or would be the person sitting behind a keyboard and a computer screen actually doing that type of network scanning himself, and that's not the case. The way it works for crimes like child pornography and underage sex crimes is that, and human trafficking for that matter, is that there are professionals who are trained and who do not work for the commander who are scanning the network, and that is their responsibility. They're looking for this type of crime all the time, every day. That's their job. And that gets reported to the commander, and the commander is expected to report certain actions to their chain of command and then to hold people accountable. Some of those.
Okay, so hold on. In this picture that you're painting for me, we're going to have somebody in. I'm the regimental commander of 5th Marines. So there's going to be somebody in the regiment that is in charge of scanning social
not
media
even the regiment.
For
yeah, not the, even the regiment
for the regiment.
In other words, these people are doing this type of scanning, and they're not part of the regiment. They're part of MARFOR Cyber Command. They're part of comms battalions and DETs. They aren't even, this is their full-time job. That's what they do. And then they pass the information along to organizations like NCIS and CID who conduct investigations to identify the individuals. And again, that information goes back to the commander for adjudication. I know this because I was on the parole board. I was a legal officer. That's how the system works. There's no reason to think that same sort of network scanning cannot happen with keywords identified, like there's no reason to think that can't happen with this type of crime. It's not making a commander's job harder.
Okay.
It's making his life easier.
Okay. You kind of broke up. Scan on words like?
Like Wookiee.
Okay.
Like, the other derogatory terms that have come out in the media that we've known for decades were being used. I mean, walking mattress. You know, I mean, if you... I can tell you, I've written articles, and in the remarks in the articles where Marines have actually put their Marine Corps photos and names, they've used derogatory terms about me, profanity. I mean, the fact is there are ways to screen out that type of behavior. But the reality is that no matter how much scanning you do of a network, it does not change the culture. That's just supervision. Changing the culture requires how we indoctrinate men and women at the most foundational level of their entry and their training in the Marine Corps. And that has to happen both on recruiting and then the recruit depot.
Okay, so if you were Monarch for the day, the mm-hmm. solution, let's kind of walk through a solution or at least a starting point that you would recommend to the Commandant in terms of across the board solution that we've talked about. So go ahead, walk me through that. One is recruit training, yes? Zero is recruiting, right?
Zero is recruiting, and we've talked about ways to change how women are recruited and held accountable for preparation. Second is integrate recruit training and define what integration means so that there's a clear understanding of the intent and what we're trying to achieve. Make sure that you're tracking at recruit training the performance statistics for men and women, and people are asking hard questions when there is a big delta between the genders. Rifle range is a great example of that. Decades long underperformance by female recruits. So that's fixing boot camp, making sure that men and women have the opportunity to compete with each other so that they get stronger, faster, tougher. You know, the second thing is we talked about changing how we recruit women. But we've also mentioned that we need to recruit more women. The fact is that right now women comprise less than 9% of the total force, and that is a problem because when you are such a minority, you are always the other. So we not only have to recruit stronger, tougher, faster women, we have to recruit more of them. We need to make sure that we're holding people accountable, and you and I have talked a lot about that in the time that we've been on this morning. The fact is that we say we hold people accountable, but we truly don't. And had we held people accountable a long time ago for gender-specific discrimination, harassment, and bias, we wouldn't have such a significant sexual assault problem today. You know, whistleblowers need better protections, and we need to make sure that the Equal Opportunity Manual, the regulations, cover gender bias, which is essentially having lower expectations for a specific group or gender. Right now, the EO manual only covers harassment or discrimination, and gender bias is similar, but it's different. And until you define it, it's very difficult to hold people accountable to not being responsible for that type of behavior. So better whistleblower protections and a better definition of gender bias in the Equal Opportunity Manual would be key. And, you know, again, accountability, accountability, accountability. We need to make sure that commanders are being held accountable, that staff and COs are being held accountable for leading and mentoring Marines. Sometimes that means making sure that we're holding people accountable for doing stuff wrong. Sometimes that means rewarding them for when they do stuff right, but there has to be a balance.
UCMJ specifically spells out the transmission of images, yes or no?
It's pretty vague, and unfortunately the way that it's written right now, it doesn't necessarily talk about the people who share photos, who share information. And so We do need to take a look at how the UCMJ is written so that it does encompass bullying and cyber harassment. But again, you can have all the pages in the UCMJ. You can make it a 12, you know, inch thick book. But until you have accountability and leadership and mentorship at the, you know, fundamental levels in the Marines, we're never going to fix this problem.
Okay. And then the last thing we talked about was cyber monitoring. That the Marine Corps has to get its hands around monitoring social media content and looking to see if active duty Marines are participating.
Absolutely. And then doing something with that information, which, again, goes back to the accountability piece.
All right. Final question for you, Kate. Mm-hmm. What do you say to women that may have been victimized by a site like Marines United, yet don't want to come forward because they don't want any more, they don't need any more abuse. They don't need to call attention to themselves. They just want it to go away.
They don't need to come forward. I disagree with the Commandant's statement yesterday that to prosecute these crimes, we have to have victims named and come forward. This isn't the same as a sexual assault case. The bottom line is, as Senator McCaskill pointed out yesterday, these cases, based on what is found on the network, they're prima facie cases. They can be proven in a court of law just based off of the evidence from what's collected during an investigation. The women who've been subjected to this type of mistreatment and behavior, they shouldn't have to come forward and give their names and be part of that process. It's not necessary. If the Commandant wants them to believe that he's going to do everything he can to change the system and to eliminate gender bias and discrimination, it doesn't require them coming forward. It requires him acting and holding people accountable.
All right. And if you were going to give the Commandant any advice, what would you tell him?
I would say that he should be calling on people who have the experience and the knowledge right now, the subject matter experts, who may not be in the Marine Corps or maybe in the Marine Corps. He should be asking those individuals how to fix the problem instead of his senior generals and staff. He's doing some of that by having these task force, working groups. But right, there are people like me who want the Marine Corps to succeed, and I would love to help, but for whatever reason, we're not part of the process.
One of the other, to me, highlights the issue was something that got said yesterday. You know, the senior leaders in the Marine Corps, they're not on Facebook. They don't do social media.
Right.
And they don't even know how it works, most of them. The public affairs officers come to them and tell them, hey, sir, we need you because we need to put something out on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And they go and they record it and they do their thing. But that's not the same as, Do you see any of this? Are you a part of any of this? My own opinion is, hey, you got to get on Facebook. You got to watch and you got to participate because that is what 60% of the force is under the age
of 20. That's how they're communicating.
Is one under the age of 26, and we turn over 100,000 Marines and 180 plus thousand force every 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's astounding in terms of how young we are and how much turnover there is and what a challenge it is to make sure that they get the value system, they understand what's expected of them. Mm-hmm. And I think as a leader, if you're not plugged into that, then how do you hold people accountable in a culture that you don't even understand?
Yeah, I think that starts with small unit leadership as well. I mean, that's something that we've neglected for a while because we've been at war and people make excuses for and venerate combat veterans. But here's the deal. Small unit leadership can fix everything. Senior generals, they're kind of oblivious. I don't see them as being necessarily part of the solution to this problem because they're so removed. I mean, look how hard it was for the commandant to even accept that this was happening in his Marine Corps. The senators who spoke to him yesterday said, you know that your Marines are thumbing their noses at you. You know, I mean, the generals aren't going to fix this. The fact is that small unit leadership is going to be the key to eradicating bad behavior.
And those were the Marines that were taunting not only the commandant, but NCIS.
Right.
Somebody posted their DD-214 and said, hey, come get me.
Absolutely.
Blah, 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 blah.
You got it.
Okay. All right. Kate, is there anything that you want to say that – let me just say this. I know General Neller, and I know that he means what he says. I don't know that he understands, and I know he said as much yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, what you saw yesterday was him wrestling with an issue that in his mind, he doesn't have it – he does not have it set in his head how this thing's going to work and how he's going to put an end to it. You can see that he's wrestling. You could see it in his face, you know, that this thing that he loves so much that he's devoted his life to, this is a part of it that he doesn't know very well, and he's trying to get his hands around it. So, again, I respect him, a lot as an officer, but I know it's a hard issue. It's an issue that a lot of parts of our society face, and hopefully the Marine Corps can put its best foot forward. But again, I think that it's interesting because every Marine I've talked to, male and female, when I ask them the question, do we need more classes? The answer is unanimous. No. We need people to get the wood laid to them that cross these lines and set
That's
an example for everybody else in terms of accountability.
And who does that? Who sets the accountability standard? You know, it starts with the commander, and then it's the sergeant major, then it's the company commanders and the first sergeant. I mean, that's where the rubber is going to meet the road. The commandant is, I believe, truly in my heart. He wants women to succeed. He wants integration to succeed, but not everybody on his staff does. And so he potentially has people advising him who are not doing him or the Marine Corps service. So I think it starts with talking to subject matter experts who may not be the popular people, but who know the right answers that he needs to hear, even if they hurt.
Interesting, because I can tell you, and I don't want to open up another can of worms, but
sure.
People that would say would hear you say the Marine Corps, you know, needs to get to, what did Secretary Mavis say, 25% female.
Right.
Absolutely recoil at that number, saying, how in God's name can we do what we do, you know, with that number? We couldn't do it.
How much of that is based on fact, though? How much of that is based on fact, and how much of it is based on decades-long underperformance and this idea that women are so frail that they could never do the jobs the Marine Corps requires of them? That's what I would say.
Right.
And I think that the sooner people start thinking about the potential of women, the sooner we're going to see this system change and we'll see completely different results. But the fact of the matter is, for decades, we have assumed women were not capable, and therefore we held them to lower standards. And that does bring men into service, and it fundamentally does women into service.
Can I quarrel with one word? We haven't assumed it, or... Not only have we assumed it, but because we've accepted it,
mm-hmm.
I don't a self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of...
Oh, absolutely. It's like a self-licking ice cream cone.
We accept it, so it starts with we're happy that we made that number in recruit training.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to
mm-hmm.
push them too hard because we don't want them to...
Because they'll break,
and then I'll have to go find somebody else. And so we ship, they underperform in terms of their inventory PFT, yada, yada, yada.
Absolutely. You got it. It becomes a self-licking ice cream cone. When you set a low expectation, it becomes the expectation for all future performance. Absolutely.
All right. All right. So then the footnote to everything that you're saying is that I'm going to raise the bar for you in terms of performance across the board for female Marines.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? That's what female Marines want. That's what they expect. They don't join the Marine Corps for it to be easier for them. And that is offensive to men. I mean, the fact is that men want women to be held accountable to high standards, too.
Right.
Because it's unfair for men that women are allowed to do less but still earn the title. And that, I think, creates a lot of that dissension in the lower ranks that causes this type of misogynistic behavior.
Her name is Kate Germano. She's a retired Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel. She's not shy about her opinions, and she has a few of them. Kate, first of all, I always appreciate the conversation and the way you go about it. So thank you very much for doing this, and I hope in the future you won't be shy about coming back on again.
Never. It's truly my pleasure. Thanks so much.
There you have it. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.